In Depth with Francis Rose on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. Usable news and information for your job. And now, here's Francis Rose.
Welcome to the program for Monday, October 17th, 2011 on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. We're focusing today on workforce issues in the federal government, and one of the most interesting workforce proposals that I've seen in a long time is coming from Deloitte's GovLab. It's a study called The Future of the Federal Workforce and a report on what they're calling FedCloud. And I have a number of folks from Deloitte in the studio here to talk about it today. I'm happy to welcome Bill Eggers of Deloitte and also author of the book, If We Can Put a Man on the Moon. It's good to see you, Bill.
It's great to be back again, Francis. Thanks for having us.
I understand that you changed some plans to be here today, and I really appreciate that. That's very nice of you to come in.
Yeah, I left the golf course early, you know.
Oh, and, darn. Well, then I don't feel so bad in that case. Charlie Tierney of Deloitte is also here. Charlie, it's good to see you. Thanks for coming in today.
Francis, thank you for having me.
Also, we have Dan Helfrich, who is a principal at Deloitte and helped put this together. Dan, good to see you.
Thanks, Charlie. Francis, looking forward to the conversation.
Me too. And also on in the studio with us is John Palguda, Vice President of the Partnership for Public Service. And you were a veteran of OPM for how long?
Well, OPM of the Merit System Protection Board for over 30 years.
Okay, so you know a little bit about HR issues. So
a little bit.
I appreciate you being here, too, to offer your expertise as we look at this issue. Bill, you were on the air with me about a week or so ago, and we had a short time to talk about FedCloud and what it means. Go back over what we talked about just for a minute or so to get us started, please.
Sure. I mean, we talked about the fact that the structure of the government, the workforce structure, hasn't changed in, 50, 60 years, really. That's when the GS schedule was put together. And yet the way we work has changed massively. The problems and challenges that we face have changed. And so we designed the workforce for a system where a good majority of the workforce was comprised of clerks in the lowest pay grades. And today, that's a very small percentage of the federal workforce. It's much more of a white-collar, very kind of a workforce with a lot of people with PhDs and master's degrees. And we said, let's design a model that better fits today's rapidly changing world.
John, we talked about this on the air with your colleague Tim McManus on Friday about the fact that the federal workforce now is overwhelmingly in the GS 12 to 15 or equivalent range, where, as Bill talked about, when the GS schedule was originally devised, it was very heavily concentrated in the, I imagine, 5 to 9 range?
If you go back to when the general schedule pay system was put in place, 1949, 70% of the workforce was GS 5 or below.
Mm. So that's an example of how significantly this shift that Bill's talking about has taken place. That's, 60, 70 years?
Yeah, a huge shift in the workforce, not so much on some of our systems and structures. I mean, there's a significant lag here, but we can talk about that, the implications of that.
And I think not only a shift in the workforce, but a shift in the way work is done.
Mm-hmm.
From highly clerical, highly transactional, highly operational work to more problem-solving, knowledge-based work. And so this model is about how do we pool the best, highly skilled, knowledge-based workers and get them working on the toughest problems.
Well, Dan, as you started to develop this idea, well, where'd the idea come from, actually? What's the germination here to get a better context of where it will go, where you want to take it?
Sure, Francis. Like most good ideas, I think it came from a heated dinner table / water cooler conversation among people pretty passionate about the federal workforce. And we were actually talking about why more 20-somethings who have a passion for public service haven't been choosing to go into the federal government. And so we started talking about the characteristics of work and the characteristics of a workplace that would more attract people like Charlie here. And so we actually had a bunch of our more junior resources that sit in this GovLab innovation group. We started playing the concept out and saying, there's something here. And the conversation turned to the benefits of cloud, which most people associate with technology. But mm-hmm. if you actually look at the concept of cloud, it's about pooling resources to create more efficiency, to scale up and down. And we said, the concept of cloud actually applies to labor, mm-hmm. and there the concept was born.
The idea, though, everything that you said, I think, makes sense and is understandable. One of the biggest issues, though, is that just as cloud technology people in government have been resistant to adopting it, I can see as I go through this report a number of points where HR people and hiring managers and so on and all kinds of managers in government will be resistant to the idea. And it strikes me that it's the same concept. Initially in government, in the IT community, the idea that I couldn't put my arms around my servers, server huggers were what I called them. That was a big problem for people to figure out that how I could deal with the fact that I don't have control over these resources. And it strikes me that that's probably the objection that you hear most about when you talk about this with HR people.
It is the objection we hear most about. But when we look at the big picture, we see people craving, and I'm talking again not about the entire federal workforce, and I think we need to be clear here. We're probably talking about 15, 20, 25, 30% of the workforce. We see many people in that problem solver, knowledge, skill-based worker set saying, I want more variety. I want more flexibility to the type of work I do. And so they're actually clamoring for something like this. The HR professional, does it call different questions? And John, you and I have had this conversation. Does it call into questions about performance management, how people are evaluated? Does it call questions about how people are paid? Absolutely.
Mm-hmm.
But there's precedent for this, and you know, we believe it takes the dialogue in a whole new direction.
But it can also make the job of an HR person a lot easier in many respects, because what happens now is you have a whole new set of skills that you need. Like right now, every agency wants people with data analytic skills who understand big data, who data statisticians and so forth. How do we find those people? That's very difficult, like a needle in a haystack in the U.S. federal government, right? But in a cloud sort of a model, the idea is that there would be a whole set of people who identify themselves with certain skill sets, and you reach up into the cloud, and if that's what your big needs are now, you can bring them over for a few years. Or let's say in the cloud in general, because 5 years ago, no one could imagine that data analytics was going to be one of the hottest things in government. But there's a lot of people with statistical abilities, mathematical and so forth, and that the cloud would identify that. And then what you could do is, then you start reskilling those people. And then you start, we need to upgrade their skills. And so from an HR standpoint, you're not having to hire hundreds and hundreds of new people, essentially. You're maybe reskilling some and you're reaching up there. So in fact, it reduces some transaction costs and some big, I think, kind of hiring sort of issues at the same time.
There's a couple of points in this report that I think well define what you're talking about here. I want to throw each of these three points out. And Bill, Charlie, and Dan, have you talk about these. And any one of you can jump in here. In FedCloud, cloud workers reside in a central talent pool accessible by many agents. And Bill, that gets at the essence of what you just talked about, is these people live and work not for a particular agency, but for the government. Is that right?
Absolutely. And so let's say you are a project manager or a data analyst or a statistician, to use Bill's parlance. You have a skill profile. We know who you are. We know what problems you've worked on in the past.
Mm-hmm.
We know whether or not you're available, because you're either assigned to a project or you aren't. And when I have a need, I reach into the cloud, I match skill set with project need, and bam, I've formed a team that has comprised people with a much greater variety of perspective who may combined have worked across dozens of agencies instead of relying just on the permanent structures and the single source of talent within an agency.
All right. The next point is FedCloud could reduce the burden on each individual agency to maintain and manage a large workforce. How would that work? What would make that happen?
Well, one of the things that we did when we were looking throughout the research is we tried to see how agencies have been able to share resources or even share services. I think one of the case studies we looked at was e-payroll, essentially taking 28 disparate payroll functions, trying to bring those down to four.
Mm-hmm.
I think we're at four right now. We still have some DOD payroll wanting to do their own thing. But taking those types of transactional back office services, how we can combine those. And there's actually a big shared service component in the model outside of just this knowledge pool of skilled workers.
We're going to get into later on what exactly, how you determine whether somebody's job position is qualified to go into the cloud or not. But is it primarily what we're looking at, those types of service workers who are performing back office functions where what they do doesn't really vary that much agency to agency?
I would call those people the right model for shared services, right? Mm. We've seen an evolution of shared services. If I'm, processing payroll, if I'm processing transactions, I ought to be using a finance or HR shared service center. What we're really talking about in the cloud, Francis, are, you know, more highly skilled problem-solving folks, so economists, program managers, more senior acquisition folks, more senior IT specialists, et cetera. So shared services plus this more highly skilled knowledge base forms the essence of the model.
All right, I'll get one more point I want to touch on here, but we have to take a break. So let's do that, and then let's talk about specifically who makes sense to go into the cloud in just a minute on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. I got a full house on Federal News Radio 1500 today. I've got Bill Eggers, Charlie Tierney, and Dan Helfrick of Deloitte, and I've got John Palguda of the Partnership for Public Service, and we'll talk more about the Fed Cloud when In-Depth continues in just a moment.
Attention civilian employees of the intelligence community and the Departments of Defense and State. You could be eligible for affordable term life insurance from GEBA, the Government Employees Benefit Association, with coverage issued by Prudential. Learn more about this important benefit for government employees at GEBA.com/term life. That's GEBA.com/term life. Group term life coverage for GEBA is issued by the Prudential Insurance Company of America, 751 Broad Street, Newark, New Jersey, 07102. Contract series 83500.
My family struggled, and it was assumed that while I would go to college, I would have to pay for it myself.
Charlie wasn't sure how to get the money she needed for college. Then she found out about federal student aid and the FAFSA.
I don't think I quite realized what a huge deal actually graduating was. Federal student aid definitely made that happen.
Need help planning and paying for college? Find out more at college.gov.
My name is Charlie, and this is my story.
Government technology professionals should prepare to attend GovCom 2011, the new trade show featuring government audiovisual communication solutions at the Walter E. Washington Convention Center, November 1st and 2nd, featuring nearly 100 leading manufacturers and solutions providers showcasing the latest in audio, video, conferencing, collaboration, control systems, digital signage, and visual display technologies. GovCom will help government agencies and the military boost collaboration, enhance security, improve reliability, and cut costs. GovCom is your opportunity to see cutting-edge communications products, network with fellow technology professionals, and get valuable training from leading experts in government and industry. For more information and your free exhibits pass, visit GovCom2mshow.org and use the code FED. That's govcomshow.org. GovCom is brought to you by Infocom International, the association representing the audiovisual industry. Here's John Edgar, VP for Information Technology at the Postal Service, on the Storage Efficiency Panel sponsored by NetApp.
You know, if you look at the Postal Service with the data that we capture, again, there's more mail products, more data about the products. We're moving towards more real-time, near-real-time data collection from the mail carriers out on the street. Vehicles tie in the geospatial information for movement of vehicles and all that. The growth of that data is exponential.
To hear more, visit federalnewsradio.com, keyword storage.
How can you reduce your agency's IT budget and support the mission even more effectively? Here's a simple strategy. Cut one of your biggest IT expenditures in half. NetApp storage is flexible and easy to manage. It also requires far less hardware, at least 50% less for virtualized environments. IT efficiency starts with storage efficiency built on NetApp and delivered by NetApp partners like Thundercat Technology. To get efficient now, visit netapp.com/federal.
I'm Amy Morris. Here's a look at Tuesday morning's Federal Drive. A proposed rule would require prime contractors to notify contracting officers in writing when they change subcontractors. And a proposed rule would change how you deal with lobbyists and just what gifts you can and cannot accept. That and more Tuesday morning starting at 6 on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. For all the latest federal news, check us out on federalnewsradio.com.
We're back on In Depth with Francis Rose on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM, looking at the FedCloud proposal as made by Deloitte for the future of the federal workforce. And the conversation includes today Bill Eggers, Charlie Tierney, and Dan Helfrich of Deloitte, and John Palguda, the Partnership for Public Service. And gentlemen, I mentioned before we went to the break, there are three main points in the beginning of this report where we talk about, you talk about cloud workers residing in a central talent pool that any agency can access them, that the FedCloud could reduce the burden on each individual agency, and we talked about how. You also write, by pooling workers in a government-wide FedCloud, resources could be quickly shifted from low-need to high-need programs and agencies without requiring individual agencies to hire new workers or stand up new organizations. Now, tell me a little bit about how agencies can take confidence in the structure of this cloud, that they're, first of all, going to be able to find the people that they need when they need to start something new, when they need to build a new structure and ramp it up quickly. And talk also about the confidence that they can have that the people who are in that, that they're going to be able to draw from, are qualified to do whatever it is they need to do. Who wants to take that one? Charlie, you want to go there?
Sure, I'll go ahead and start, and then we can probably tag team this.
All right.
I think one of the important things to remember is that we're not saying we're getting rid of the, you know, executive agency structure. We still have agencies in place. We still have cabinet-level organizations that are driving a lot of the work of government, and we still have people in charge of those organizations to make sure that performance measures are being met, that the government workers are doing the jobs that have been set and budget has been assigned to them. So I still think there's a lot of oversight that we have left in place as far as making sure that agencies or organizations have the confidence in the workers within this labor pool.
But the big thing that we talk about in here that's going to change that and give them confidence, for instance, is complete transparency, both not only in the skill sets that they have, but the experience that they've had. We talk about an experience point system, essentially, mm-hmm. to where after you engage in various projects and then you get experience points for that, you get performance evaluations. A lot of that sort of what your skill sets are and how you've upskilled, it's all transparent. It's all available there. And you can keep on moving up to master levels, essentially, over time. And, think about that. And it makes it all very, very transparent. And you're using algorithms and other things to figure out exactly what are the people with those kind of data analytic skills that you need right now. So right now, it's kind of like looking for a needle in haystack, mm-hmm. right? And again, what we talked about the other week was that the new Consumer Finance Protection Bureau, essentially they had to hire 1,000 people within a very short period of time. Mm-hmm. You know, that was, and with very, very specific skill sets. If they had something like the cloud, a Fed cloud, it would have dramatically changed how they went about that process.
John, let's pretend for a minute that I'm trying to build a unit at an agency and I have access to this Fed cloud. What am I going to be looking for as far as what Bill and his colleagues from Deloitte are talking about, Charlie and Dan? And is that what that hiring manager, that team builder really needs to see?
Well, this is something that is, really geared towards helping a certain type of manager, someone who's got the need, who has the vision. But it's also going to be something that is going to not happen overnight. We've got cultural issues. We've got generational issues, if you will, and some structural issues. As we said at the outset, we still have operating procedures in law that go back to the 40s and 50s. So I think we've got understanding there's some folks that, this would really scare. And what the manager is going to need to do is to find out, really define what it is. It's not every position. Some people who are comfortable in the old structures will still have those old structures around. But you're looking for actually a new type of employee. And I think I've got two recent grads, daughters, who would be quite comfortable, working in the cloud. A lot of folks my generation, think it's a pipe dream.
Mm-hmm.
So you're going to have to – this is something that will build over time. We're at the same time, we're going to have to change some of the laws, some of the structures. We're going to have to change our compensation system. There's a chapter in the – or a section in the Deloitte report here on reinventing HR. That's true. we're going to have to reinvent, you know, how we approach workforce management, and that's performance management and pay and even management itself. You know, you're not, you know, managing people by looking at them. You're managing people based on output. You're pulling people together for a task. When that task is over, that group dissolves and it, you know, goes back to the cloud. And it's a fairly significant way of doing business, a different way of doing business than most government employees are used to. But I think this is really something that is going to be a lot of fun to see how this matures.
There's no question that it's very different. Our argument is that the efficiency and the value is significant. Let's go back to Bill's example for a second. Brand new agency stands up. That agency has to do all the kinds of things you need to do to stand up a government organization from scratch, which isn't simple, has a bunch of building blocks that need to happen. Imagine if they could have reached into the cloud and said, I want 3 budget people that have been there when a new agency's financial system was started from scratch. And instead of having to try to hire those people through some process, imagine if that person standing the organization could say, I'm going to put a request into the cloud, and voila, I have access to people who've built that budget system for an agency that maybe stood up in the wake of 9/11 mm-hmm. or through some of the, you know, intelligence restructuring. That's the kind of knowledge sharing and experience sharing that we think can happen. I sort of tell people, to me, this is the best knowledge management system in the world. We've spent hundreds of millions of dollars on knowledge management systems and trying to share solutions. Well, if we can share the best people who bring with them those experiences, those ideas, imagine how much better the solutions will be that we get to.
Well, let's talk about, when we come back from the break, exactly the kinds of people that you're talking about sharing here. You have a flowchart that I want you to walk me through when we come back on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. We're talking about the concept of a Fed cloud, where you can reach into the cloud and pull not just IT resources, but people resources into your agency, with Bill Eggers, Charlie Tierney, and Dan Helfrich of Deloitte, and John Palguda of the Partnership for Public Service. We'll be back in a moment.
Remember when you tried doing something for the first time? You probably weren't very good at it. On a scale of stinko to virtuoso, chances are you were right down there. But you kept at it, and soon you went from not so hot to halfway decent. Kaiser Permanente reminds you, we all start out as beginners, stumbling over our feet, going right instead of left, swinging and missing. So whatever you're curious about, tennis or horseback riding, playing guitar or pole dancing, softball or soccer, forget about being perfect and focus on the fun. The rest will fall into place. So come on, stumblers, bumblers, listen up. It's okay to stink. Just start. Kaiser Permanente. We want you and your interests to thrive. Visit kp.org/thrive.
Kaiser Foundation Health Plan of the Mid-Atlantic States Incorporated, 2101 East Jefferson Street, Rockville, Maryland, 20852.
Do you know us? We employ more than 70,000 people in more than 800 locations throughout the United States. Through our network of suppliers, we indirectly enable tens of thousands of American jobs. Tens of thousands. Jobs that put food on the table. Jobs that put kids through college. Jobs that keep our economy going. And yet, many of you don't even know who we are. Our name is United Technologies. We are Carrier, Hamilton Sunstrand, Otis, Pratt & Whitney, Sikorsky, and UTC Fire and Security. 6 businesses united as one powerful company. We may be the biggest unknown company in America, but our jobs power the economy, and our technologies, products, and services power the world. United Technologies. Get to know more about us at utc.com.
Federal News Radio is a proud partner of FEA, the Federal Employees Education and Assistance Fund. In the past 25 years, FEA has helped more than 21,000 federal families with over $18 million in aid. By donating just $1 per pay period, you can help federal families keep the lights on, clean up after a natural disaster, or send a kid to college. Keep your CFC dollars in the federal family and make your pledge to FEA 11185 today. Learn more at FEA.org. That's FEEA.org.
Good old jeans. From the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services, I'm Ira Dreyfuss with HHS HealthBeat. To live to be very old, have good old jeans. A researcher at Albert Einstein College of Medicine of Yeshiva University in New York City saw this in 447 people ages 95 to 112. Nir Barzilai says their lifestyles weren't more healthy than others born around the same time, so the difference must be in genes that favor long lives. Barzilai advises those not genetically blessed.
Keep their weight, exercise, do all the other things that the doctors are telling them because that's proven to be right.
Barzilai advises this also for the blessed, just in case. The study in the Journal of the American Geriatrics Society was supported by the National Institutes of Health. Learn more at hhs.gov. HHS HealthBeat is a production of the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services. I'm Ira Dreyfuss.
Plan now to attend Affirm's Golf Classic on Monday, November 7th for a full-day scramble for either new players or those with handicaps to raise funds for Affirm's scholarship program. Sign up now to play or to sponsor. The tournament is a sellout every year. From the shotgun start at the beautiful River Creek Club in Leesburg to the awards reception that follows, you'll spend time with colleagues from the government and industry technology community. Register today for the season's last golf tournament at www.affirm.org.
We're back on In Depth with Francis Rose on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. We're talking about the FedCloud concept of human resources management in the federal government with Bill Eggers, Charlie Tierney, and Dan Helfrich of Deloitte, and John Palguda of the Partnership for Public Service. And gentlemen, I appreciate all of you being here today. One of the things that we've touched on briefly and I want to dig into more is exactly who we're talking about here as what positions, at least, being potential candidates to go into the cloud. You've got a flow chart on page 15 of this that I'd like you guys to walk me through. Charlie, you want to start off with this for me?
Yeah, sure. I'd be happy to. One of the things we first did is we had to come up with a credible assumption on, you know, what's the real population size that we think could move into this model. And we pulled our information from OPM. They maintain a wonderful website where you can get up to the quarter information on all of the GS employees in the federal government. You can cut it a bunch of different ways. So we pulled that out and we started looking at it. And we came up with a list of questions, almost diagnostic questions or a flowchart, to see what are the first steps an agency would need to go through to consider how many people we're really talking about. And the first question we asked is, does the agency mission or require workers to be tied to one geographic location? Now, this could be for a number of reasons, for equipment, for just the infrastructure to support them, the customers they serve, the services they provide. It's actually kind of interesting. We've seen some things recently where we talked about equipment and we almost thought of maybe scientific equipment. We're thinking, you know, NASA and observatories or things like that. But you can now rent by the hour very powerful electron microscopes and you don't even need to be anywhere close to these facilities. The second question we looked at is, does a worker's job require regular face-to-face interaction with citizens? And if so, frontline workers, this is probably not an ideal situation to be moved into the cloud because people depend on the services from government.
Mm-hmm.
The third question is, does the worker directly supervise frontline workers or who fall into the first two categories?
Mm-hmm.
And we thought those people probably not the best fit.
Okay.
Then the fourth question is, does the worker perform or supervise a set of non-mission-orientated ongoing back-office tasks, things like human resources technicians or payroll processing or maybe real estate acquisitions? And we thought a good chunk of these individuals and these jobs who are performed at multiple agencies could be moved into government-wide shared services.
Mm-hmm.
And that leaves us with essentially what's left over, about 580,000 or so employees that we think do make up a good core contingent of our quote-unquote white-collar knowledge workers and performance management experts, program managers, economists, public health specialists. We looked at all of the 400-plus occupational series from OPM, and we thought, you know, the ones that fit after going through this process, those are what we're thinking of when we think of our cloud labor pool.
All right, John, you are our HR gray beard here, or a gray mustache, I should say. Does that sound like a logical progression to you? Are they asking the right questions here about who does and doesn't fit into this model?
Yeah, it is. And this is not, let me be clear, this is not teleworking.
Right.
But it's the same notion process-wise.
Mm-hmm.
There are some jobs, you look at the jobs, there are some jobs that don't lend themselves to teleworking. You still need air traffic controllers in the towers. You
yep.
need border protection people on
park
the border,
ranger has to be at the park, yeah.
Exactly. So you eliminate all those jobs, and then you kind of narrow it down to, well, where are the, you know, what are the jobs and therefore the people in those jobs that would lend themselves to not having to be on site, being on call perhaps for a range of agencies. And this seems to be, you know, a fairly logical way to proceed, and coming out big picture wise with about 25% or so of the workforce could be eligible to, by function, to work in the cloud.
Mm-hmm. All right.
The one thing I just want to add to that, John, and really important concept, is that because of technological advances, this will change over time. So, John, when you're saying, you know, border security people need to be on the border, this and that, the first thing I thought of was that, well, you know, we actually have drones, UAVs now, which are patrolling
yeah.
the border right now. And I could list a whole bunch of other sort of things that we would thought were you know, you had to be there, and there were physical things that are now either automated or done virtually in various ways. So that's always going to change, which is another reason for this. We have a government right now which is not very adaptable.
Mm-hmm.
It's basically stuck in these sort of concrete things, and this allows you to be much more adaptable as work changes, as technology changes. Different sort of occupations may end up in the cloud that aren't even there now.
A couple of things that occurred to me as I looked at this flowchart, and then, Charlie, as I heard you talk about it some more, and I want to throw these out there. Number one, if 580,000 people fit in this category, do there have to be 580,000 people, or does the nature of the cloud require either more or fewer people to fit into that category? The other is this necessarily going to impact what goes on in Washington, or is there potential for decentralization here because these people don't necessarily have to be located in Washington, D.C.?
So I'll try to tackle both of those. The first is, to me, the number is a supply and demand equation. You have to start somewhere. I promise you, if we get this started, we'll start with fewer than 500,000
sure.
employees that, you know, say, yeah, let me in.
Uh-huh.
And, you know, it's about – it's much like anything. It's how many people do I have to fit the number of problems and missions that I have. So to me, that's a you know, it's a pure supply and demand equation. On your second question, absolutely. We ought to be able to get people from outside the Beltway. We ought to be able to get people working in the government outside the country
mm-hmm.
to assist and work on these problems. I mean, Charlie, you can talk about the virtual foreign service example from the State Department, but there's some progressive things happening or about to happen where we're farming out tasks through microtasking to the cloud in a way that's pretty progressive and says, you know, there's a bunch of work that can be done by a variety of people, and it doesn't matter where they are. And that's mm-hmm. how I get more efficient resource allocation models.
I understand what you're saying, Dan, about supply and demand when it comes to the number, but my thought is one of the objections I hear some groups raising is this is they're going to try to cut employees. They're going to try to cut the size of the workforce by using this model, in that if there are currently 580,000 positions that apply, you're only going to try to staff it with X number of people. And that's I don't know how much of that debate is real and how much of it's a potential political debate and so on.
It's probably all of those
yeah,
things.
That's probably true.
You know, from our perspective, if you can get the best government employees working on the toughest problems, as simple as that sounds, you know, that is the optimal solution. Does that require fewer folks in certain roles or certain geographies? Probably. Does it perhaps affect contractors? Probably. You know, all those things are on the table. But, you know, if we can be more efficient with getting the skilled people to the right problems, we're going to be doing things a heck of a lot better, which is important in this kind of, you know, economic environment.
Yeah, and Francis, I would say that the question you asked about, is this going to be a vehicle to reduce the workforce? I think it's almost the other way around.
Mm-hmm.
The workforce is being reduced, at least relative to the demands upon it. You know, we have fewer federal employees in the government right now than we had at the end of the Reagan administration. So I think you've got agencies and managers out there that are already feeling the squeeze. And they're looking for the way to, you know, ways to get the mission done with the resources they have, which aren't keeping up with demand. So I don't think this is going to be so much this will drive a reduction. I think it's the reduction in resources driving demand for something like this as a way to cope.
Okay, so when you say that, then it leads me to think that this will force two other things, and it will those are performance management, which, Bill, you and I have talked about on any number of occasions, and mission assessment. Do we really need these people to do we really need to do these things if we're going to devote people to try and get these? So let's talk about that a little bit when we come back from the break. And then let's talk about implementation, what your vision is for getting this in, at least on a trial basis. We'll do that when we come back on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. My guests are Dan Helfrick, Charlie Tierney, and Bill Eggers of Deloitte, and John Palguda of the Partnership for Public Service on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM.
To the Marines who watch over the skies, it says the enemy can't see you. To the Marines who carry out their mission on the ground, it says I have your back. To adversaries, it says don't even think about it. It is the F-35B, the fifth generation multi-role fighter jet that combines short takeoff and vertical landing capability with supersonic speed and radar evading stealth. The F-35B, the multi-role fighter that's equipped to go wherever Marines must go. Wherever the mission takes them, our Marines know it will be there. It's the F-35B, a fighter jet that can take off and land virtually anywhere, from the most remote, austere airfields and roads to modern ships. That means it can be based close to frontline combat, shrinking the distance between base and target. For the Marines and for our nation, that's a game-changing advantage. The F-35B, the multi-role fighter that's equipped to go wherever Marines must go.
AT&T's commitment is clear. That's why we're announcing that with the planned merger with T-Mobile, AT&T will begin bringing 5,000 jobs to America from overseas. We will invest $8 billion more and deploy the next generation of wireless broadband to nearly everyone in America. This investment will create as many as 96,000 American jobs. We're ready to invest in America. AT&T.
Newsmakers on In Depth with Francis Rose.
Martha Doris is the Deputy Associate Administrator in the Office of Citizen Services and Innovative Technologies.
The web world is not leveraging what the contact center world has to offer. If they start integrating across government, we could look at providing more of the basic answers to questions more centrally so that agencies could spend their limited resources on the more difficult questions that are program specific.
Hear the entire interview online, federalnewsradio.com/in-depth.
Headed to Fort Detrick or the I-270 Technology Corridor, Federal News Radio can be heard crystal clear on 820 AM in Frederick, Maryland. It's the same great station, just on an added frequency. Get the latest news about the federal government and government contractors. Hear exclusive interviews with the movers and shakers in the federal arena. Federal News Radio, 1500 AM or 820 AM in Frederick, Maryland. Federal News Radio, your source for federal news now.
Thanks for listening to In Depth with Francis Rose on Federal News Radio 1500. In this hour of the program, focusing on human resources management in the federal government and a model proposed by Deloitte called the Fed Cloud. You can read more about it on the in-depth page now at federalnewsradio.com. We have their report linked up, and three of their experts are in studio with me today, Bill Eggers, Charlie Tierney, and Dan Helfrich, and also John Palguda of the Partnership for Public Service, providing the voice of reason, right?
a different perspective.
Okay. Well, you're underselling yourself there, I think. One of the things that we talked about before the break is the concept that this idea, if when implemented, will really force, I think, a focus on performance management and a focus on mission assessment. Agencies will really, I think, have to stop and think twice about whether they should be continuing to do what they're doing, because it will require them to rethink how they're doing it and what kinds of people they're using to do this. On the performance management piece, Bill Eggers, do you agree with that idea that this is going to force agencies to do it? And with the difficulties that you've seen in studying this issue, are the agencies ready to deal with that at the same time they would take on something potentially like this that is this revolutionary?
Well, Francis, I was mentioning at the break that when I was over at one of the agencies speaking 2 weeks ago with Anish Chopra, was also up on stage, and two of the questions were actually around FedCloud, and especially around the experience points element, because actually they saw this as a way of a breakthrough for their performance management system and as a way to kind of force that. And what you note is that because you're much more specific about the jobs that need to be done, the big problems that need to be tackled, and when you have things like that, then you're going to want to make sure you have the absolute best people and that you have a huge amount of certainty that you're getting people who can do those, which is going to kind of force the issue of being much more serious about performance management than we are today. Mm-hmm. You know, the one other thing I'd mention, Francis, is that a benefit of this, think about most of our big challenges today in America can't be solved by one agency or another in a siloed sort of fashion. They require cross-boundary, cross-sectoral solutions, as we've talked about on your show before. And yet we don't have a government that's set up to deal with that. This offers another model. Instead of starting a new agency and every time we have a new problem, what you do is you can use the cloud. Right now it's jobs, right? Everyone, it's all about jobs. How mm-hmm. do we generate more jobs? Well, instead of saying we're just going to rely on the Department of Commerce or something, you can grab people who might have been at Commerce, Education, National Economic Council, private sector, and others from the cloud to try to tackle those sort of issues. So that cross-boundary element is a really important, I think, advantage.
Dan?
Yeah, I want to get back to the performance management issue. I think there's two things about FedCloud that really could, you know, in Bill's words, revolutionize performance management. The first is we're talking largely about project-based work, bringing people together for a project. When you have a project, you have a beginning, a middle, and an end, at least hopefully. And so measuring people on results achieved becomes a lot easier if it's defined in a project-based model. The second is human nature says if I'm evaluating people that – when the project's over, aren't going to be next door in my office every day,
mm-hmm.
I'm more likely to be more transparent and candid about the feedback I provide. And because when work is performed and completed by people in the Fed Cloud, they go back to the cloud,
right,
the likelihood of getting real assessments of those people's performance increases dramatically because you don't have those office politics in play.
All right. And you're referring to the experience points through that evaluation, what Bill called XPs earlier. And I want to say, so I'd love to dig in more into the mission assessment part of it, but I want to learn more about the XPs because that's such a critical part of this. So let's save that for the last segment, take one more break, and come back in a moment on In Depth with Francis Rose on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. We're looking at Deloitte's FedCloud model with Dan Helfrich, Charlie Tierney, and Bill Eggers of Deloitte, John Palguda of the Partnership for Public Service. Back in a moment.
Things just don't happen. You need a plan. A federal career can last 30 years or more, and so can federal retirement. Tune in each Monday at 10 a.m. to get the information you need to plan your course for financial security, solid benefits, and optimum health care. 100% focused on the federal employee for your benefit. Presented by NITP has the answers to your mid-career and retirement planning questions. Listen to For Your Benefit Mondays at 10 a.m. on 1500 AM Federal News Radio for an hour that can change your future.
Concerned about your health? Then be sure to catch the groundbreaking radio show Essentials of Healthy Living, brought to you by Village Green Apothecary. Join hosts Dana Lake and Kevin Facero as they bring you the latest news about traditional and alternative medicine, nutrition, dietary supplements, herbal remedies, and more. Tune in every Sunday at 10 a.m. on Federal News Radio. Listen to past shows and discover other healthy living resources at myvillagegreen.com. Visit Village Green Apothecary in Bethesda at 5415 West Cedar Lane.
Get set to sweat. Come to Tyson Sport and Health Club for the second annual Sweat for a Vet, a first-of-its-kind inclusive fitness event raising money and awareness for our wounded warriors. Spin, row, or crank in a three-hour inspiring class taught by the best, including disabled vets and spinning creator Johnny G. If you're challenged by a disability but would love to join them, you are totally invited. Contact Sweat for a Vet for details. Sweatforavet.org. Saturday, November 12th, starting at 9:30.
I work to help our nation, and my work makes an impact. I help my government and our allies keep citizens safe from terrorism and cyber warfare. I work for ManTech International Corporation.
Around the world and at home, ManTech employees work side by side with our troops and government to protect our homeland. We have more than 10,000 professionals doing rewarding work every day. If you're an IT professional, security expert, intelligence analyst, or engineer, apply today at mantech.com/careers.
Hi, this is Wayne Zell, host of Blueprint for Wealth, every Saturday here on Federal News Radio at 10 a.m. Please join me this week for my special guest and partner, John Dedon, trust and estates expert at Odin Feldman & Pittleman. Blueprint for Wealth is brought to you by the full-service law firm of Odin Feldman & Pittleman, located in Fairfax and serving the entire D.C. metro area. If you'd like to know more about us, visit us on the web at ofplaw.com.
Soon this little baby I'm singing to sleep will start to walk. Before I know it, I'll be dropping her off at school, beaming when she walks up to accept her diploma, or holding back tears as she takes those big steps down the aisle. But before she takes all those steps, she and thousands like her will need you to take yours. Join March for Babies to help make her steps possible. Start your team today at marchforbabies.org.
Back on In Depth with Francis Rose on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. My guests talking about the Fed Cloud as proposed by Deloitte are Deloitte's Dan Helfrich, Charlie Tierney, and Bill Eggers, and John Palguda of the Partnership for Public Service. And I mentioned before the last break that the axis around which a lot of the Fed Cloud model turns are what Deloitte calls experience points, or XPs. Charlie, give me just a kind of a digest version of what the XPs are and what they mean.
Sure. XPs are actually familiar to about a few million people around the world that have spent a couple of nights down in a basement playing video games, or maybe around a board game with their buddies doing fighting some Dungeons and Dragons. But essentially, experience points that accumulate through effective work on projects, training, education, professional certifications, and they're really beneficial in three main ways. The first is that XPs reward team players. It creates incentives to not only perform well as an individual, but also with a team. So these new teams that you're joining in the cloud on a project basis. Second, it fits work styles. We've seen a growing trend in knowledge and creative and expert communication work from the 1960s to today. This is how people are working. This is how millennials work, and XPs really do fit that.
Mm-hmm.
And then finally, it lets workers own a greater percentage of their careers. They're not necessarily locked into a general schedule with a set quality within grade increase every year that's tenure-based. It's really about how can I make sure that I own my career the most effective way that fits my work and my style.
All right. There's a lot more on XPs that I think are critical to understanding how this model works. And so I encourage you to go to federalnewsradio.com, click on the in-depth page, and we have a link to Deloitte's report on the Fed Cloud. Dan, tell me a little bit about how this would look, what this would look like in your vision ramping up for somebody who wants to start doing this.
Sure. It definitely will ramp up. The ultimate vision is not something that we see as achievable, you know, in the next couple of years. I'd send people to our report on the section called Taking the First Steps. Let me highlight three things, Francis. The first thing that people could do if they want to push the envelope and be pioneers here is think about starting a volunteer cloud. Read the case study on the State Department's virtual foreign service worker, student worker program in here. The idea is find a task, post that you need the task done to a trusted group of people, and see who raises their hand to say, I'll help you with that. The second thing is create a rotation program within your agency. Say, who wants to volunteer to rotate assignments on a frequent basis so they can see a bunch of different areas of the department? And then the last one, and this is where I'm looking for a department to step up and say, let's pilot a Fed cloud. Let's look at a problem, a project that needs to take place, even if it's just within a department and I've got four or five or six agencies that have a skill set needed, let's pilot a Fed cloud in a department. Let's find a pioneer and let's get the lessons learned that we need to see how this model would actually work in reality.
One of the things that you talk about in this taking the first steps portion that you just mentioned is building collaboration spaces, and I've seen that in firsthand at the General Services Administration, where they've built spaces specifically on each floor in each little area, and they're not quite to hoteling yet, but they will be, and yet those collaboration spaces are already set aside for you, and they're all sizes. There's room to fit two or three people. There's room to fit 30 people if you need to, depending what you need to do.
And Francis, I mean, the federal government right now, agencies have to take $4 billion out of their real estate cost that came from the White House and so forth. And so we're going to see massive changes in how real estate's done. And what we can envision is a lot more of kind of shared satellite spaces, collaboration spaces, where you might have people from a variety of agencies that are there. They're not necessarily owned by one agency or another. And that becomes a perfect avenue for doing some of this Fed cloud work. I did spend some time with some of those folks working on the GSA proposal, and they said this is absolutely perfectly in line with it. So the space thing can actually help to drive a little bit of this model. Mm-hmm. And the last thing I would say is that, those agencies think about piloting a Fed cloud. Who knows if they do this and the employees like it or not, they might be to move up some spaces in the best places to work survey, right?
Yeah, actually, and that's a good point. It's not the best places. I appreciate that plug. But the notion that this is not the sort of change that, as much as some people may want, that you force down on organizations, mm-hmm. It's you let some folks pilot it. You see that, folks have success. Success breeds success. When you find employees who enjoy this this way of working, managers who see the benefits organizationally, that's how it starts growing.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that's going to be something, again, fun to watch.
Gentlemen, I have a lot more questions and a lot more concepts in this that I would like to talk about, and we're absolutely out of time, but I appreciate all of you being here today. Thank you all very much. Bill Eggers, Charlie Tierney, and Dan Helfrich of Deloitte in studio with me, and John Palguda of the Partnership for Public Service. You can read the report from Deloitte, posted now, linked up at the in-depth page at federalnewsradio.com. Hour number two of the program is right around the corner, keeping a nice, clean, polished dashboard. Advice on doing that next on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM.